Klaus Ogermann. No boom boom.
Snowing. I'm not even moving except for my lips. And I'm a man of few words, you know. Not by design. It just seems to me these days everybody else is doing all the talking. And the singing. Here's Manny Kellum's chorus with Jubilee Joe. If you're in New York City today and you're driving, one of your wheels is missing. It's in your head. Anyway, if you're planning a long trip, it's smart to increase the air pressure in your tires. The Rubber Manufacturers Association recommends a 4-pound increase. Underinflation results in increased flexing of the sidewalls, which causes high temperatures within the tires, and that can cause deterioration of tire material. Now this from State Farm.
Hi, I'm Don Adams. The other day, I was trapped in the most dangerous place on Earth, the downtown freeway. Some of the drivers there put notches on their steering wheels for the cars they knock off. At one end of the freeway, there's a scoreboard. Sports cars are 3 points. Big cars are 5 points. And if you hit a bus, you get 10, and the scoreboard fires rockets. Well, I promised myself that if I ever got off that road alive, I'd do two things. First, I'd never drive on it again. Second, I'd get car insurance from State Farm Mutual, the world's biggest, because they're famous for lightning-fast claim service. And because State Farm has 3,917 claim representatives. If it weren't for that freeway, they'd probably only need 3. Would you believe 4?
For your car, your home, your life, and your health. State Farm is all you need to know about insurance.
Someday soon. Now monitor sports. The 1969 Kentucky Derby's only a few months away, but the 1968 Run for the Roses is still in the courts. Peter Fuller, owner of Dancer's Image, is appealing a decision which has prevented him from obtaining the 1968 Derby winner's purse. For more on the story, Fuller spoke to sports editor Len Dillon on Monitor's open line.
Peter Fuller, while Dancer's Image has finally been declared the Derby winner for 1968, you didn't get the winner's purse, and I was curious what kind of logic is involved there.
Well, Len, I'm not sure what the logic involved is, and I'm not really pleased with the decision, and I have some plans about that.
Well, I know you don't need the money, but it's nice to have.
Definitely is.
Now, what plans do you have? Are you going to appeal, Peter?
Yes, we are going to appeal, and that appeal is already in the works, Len. And now when that appeal will be heard, I'm not sure, but they say that it will be after the running of the 1969 Derby.
Peter, how much do you think the Derby has cost you, this whole mess?
It's cost so far more than the Derby purse. I'm up over the Derby purse, which is $122,500.
Ooh. Has it affected the stud fees, of course, for Dancer's Image?
Well, really, it has cast a pall of doubt over him, and none of the big breeders have patronized him. However, other breeders who perhaps are less sophisticated or perhaps more friendly to me have patronized him, so he has a full book of mares.
Peter, do you have any possibilities for an entry in this year's Derby?
Well, you know, it's funny you should ask me that, Len, because I claimed a horse named Parchment, and he won four races for me, and he's a three-year-old, and he's undefeated so far this year. And I think that to give Wather Neville Camp and some of the folks down in Kentucky a thrill, I'm going to enter him in the Kentucky Derby for 1969.
Do you think he has a chance, Peter?
That's too soon to tell. I doubt it.
Well, Peter Fuller, winner of the 1968 Kentucky Derby, and how does that strike you?
Very good, Len.
Thank you, Len Dillon for Monitor Sports.
Thanks a lot, Len.
At 17 past the hour, you're on the Monitor Beacon.
WNBC Radio 660 and WNBC FM, New York.
This weekend, Monitor is reporting on commuter problems, a subject you're probably familiar with in your area. But if you think the problems are yours alone, you're going to find out you're wrong. We've got them all across the country. Here's Kirk Carney with a report from New Orleans.
New Orleans, like most urban centers across the country, is experiencing severe problems in trying to accomplish a safe and convenient movement of people and products through and within the area. For example, even though the city's suburbs are growing at a fantastic rate, they do not yet have enough people to support a mass transit system. Unstable soil conditions make underground transportation systems extremely costly and in some cases completely unfeasible. Another difficulty is the number of independent transportation agencies already in the area. The need for solving such problems is emphasized by the fact that it takes longer to go from the New Orleans International Airport to the central section of the city than it does to fly from Houston to New Orleans. One approach that might work, according to Thomas J. Lupo, the chairman of the Regional Planning Commission for the area, is the consolidation of all transportation agencies under a single authority. Lupo says preliminary work for such an agency is now underway and the necessary legislation could be ready within 18 months. This is Kirk Carney in New Orleans reporting for Monitor.
Maybe everybody ought to just stay home. More commuter problems and hopefully some possible solutions later. Ed Ames sings on Monitor, Changing, Changing.
We are wandering, we are wandering, like the shadows of the sun. Never quite the same at evening as when morning had begun. Tasting wine from many vineyards, testing truth from many shores. Looking into funhouse mirrors, looking out of prison doors. Changing, changing, ever changing, like the waves upon the sand. Reaching in to find a meaning, reaching out to touch a hand. We are searching. Searching in the tea leaves on a spoon, placing palms upon a table, charting phases of the moon, tearing cobwebs from illusions, spinning new ones in their place, finding solace in the chalice or forgiveness in a face. Changing, changing, ever changing, like the waves upon the sand. Reaching in to find a meaning, reaching out to touch a hand. We are drifting, we are drifting through the pathways of the stars, seeking answers from the rainbows in refrigerated jars, staring voiceless at the ceiling, as the jasmine candles burn, trading gold dust in for mushrooms, no deposit, no return. Changing, changing, ever changing, like the waves upon the sand, reaching in to find the meaning, reaching out to touch her.
The Heart Association became a national voluntary health agency 21 years ago. During those years, many advances have been made in the fight against our number one health enemy. You can help speed research and even greater advances by giving to the Heart Fund. Ray Conniff, orchestra, chorus, I've got my eyes on you. Close-ups of people and events. Right now, you probably don't think that commuting problems would be high on the list of Israel's troubles, but they have them. Alvin Rosenfeld, NBC News Jerusalem, reports.
Wars can have strange results. One of the consequences of Israel's massive victory in the Six-Day War has been a massive multiplication of traffic on the road from the coastal plain where most Israelis live to Jerusalem in the Judean Hills. Before the war, Israeli Jerusalem was a rather quiet and rather dull city at the end of a narrow corridor. The holy places of Jerusalem and the fascinating markets of the old city were in Jordanian hands and inaccessible to Israelis. And so Israeli Jerusalem received few Israeli visitors. Since the war, the Israelis have fallen madly in love with reunited Jerusalem, and cars pour into the city, particularly on the Sabbath. The results are obvious: an increase in traffic jams, an increase in road accidents, a tremendous public works program to improve the road from the coast to Jerusalem. Israel has other traffic headaches as well. This country of less than 3 million people has only 100,000 private cars, but most of the roads are narrow and poor. Worse still, the number of cars has doubled in the past 4 years and is steadily increasing at the respectable rate of 15% a year. Then, too, partly because the Israelis are an exuberant people and partly because so many drivers are new to the roads, the accident rate is quite appalling. The only solution seems to be to build more roads, widen more roads, install more traffic lights. But the authorities know they probably never can keep pace with a zooming automobile population. Alvin Rosenfeld, NBC News, Jerusalem.
Ring around the world. Close-ups of people and events here and abroad. Promises, promises. In South Central Kansas, you hear Monitor on KWBW Hutchinson. Wherever you're listening, your NBC station gets a word here, then I'll be back, whoever I am.
Rowan and Martin, now people. This is Roscoe, inviting you to meet them next week on NBC Radio.
Oh, for Oliver. Oh, what reviews for Oliver. Wanda Hale of the New York Daily News says, Oliver is the best musical I have ever seen. Red Book raves and chanty. The Ladies' Home Journal says Oliver is a bloomin' hit. Time Magazine cheers. What a musical. A gleaming, steaming rum plum pudding of a film. See Lionel Bart's Oliver, a Romulus production for Columbia Pictures and Panavision and Technicolor. Rated G for general audiences.
Tickets now on sale at box office or by mail at Low State 1, Broadway at 45th Street. Children in all areas of war-torn Nigeria are now facing a winter of hunger, disease, and despair. UNICEF, the United Nations Children's Fund, has mobilized all its resources to help the innocent victims of the war. Food and medicines are being rushed to children on both sides of the fighting lines. But much more is needed to save millions from starvation, disease, and death. Your contribution to UNICEF's emergency appeal can be vital. By sending in only $1, you pay for a share of a UNICEF medical kit, which will provide 250 children with medical treatment. With $75, you provide a kit to treat 1,700 cases. Send your contribution to UNICEF, care of United Nations, New York 10017.
Problems? Don't try your patients. Try our doctor, Joyce Brothers, weeknights 7:45 to 9. WNBC, Radio 660 and WNBC FM, New York.
This is Jim Iyer, WNBC News. It's 2:30, 31 degrees in New York and still snowing. Elsewhere in the news, West Germany has accused the communist East Germans of further straining East-West relations with a new ban on travel into West Berlin. American civilians have been victims of what appears to be Viet Cong in ambush in Vietnam. And speakers at the Congress of the Italian Communist Party have voiced support for the condemnation of the Soviet invasion of Czechoslovakia. The forecast, a heavy snow warning, remains in effect. Snow accumulations up to 6 to 8 inches by late afternoon before tapering off to snow flurries towards evening and gradually ending early tonight. quite windy and cold, with temperatures this afternoon near 30, a low tonight in the mid-20s. It's now 31 degrees and snowing in New York. Tomorrow, variable cloudiness, windy and cold, with a high around 30. This is Jim Iyer, WNBC News. Now back to Monitor.
Here's Monitor.
Morgan here. And as the hijacking of planes to Havana continues... Oh, did you hear my joke about that? How's that thing? Guy goes up the pilot with the gun, and the pilot says, "Yeah, I know, Havana." The guy says, "Well, not exactly." He says, "Let the wife and kids off at Havana. I'm going to the Virgin Islands." Oh, if that man doesn't smile one of these days. Anyway, the Cuban newspapers are now getting into the act. Palante, a paper known there for satire, has issued instructions to pilots. The thing to do when a gunman approaches, according to the paper, is to burst out in giggles. And if that doesn't scare the hijacker off, they say make the best of it. Pick up some Havana cigars at the airport for the airline boss when you get back. I suppose as an added laugh to the whole episode, they'll start making the Havana cigars the kind that explode when you light them. Jimmy Rosselli sings Buonasera.
When the sky turns a hazy red, the sun heads home for its lazy bed. That's the time of day to say Buonasera. Friends get friendly and sweethearts smile. They all know in a little while that such lovely things begin with Buonasera. I would meet you where lovers meet, a small piazza or a shady street, just to hear the way you say Buonasera. If you said it in a thousand ways, I'd be waiting for a thousand days for that little Italian phrase Buonasera. In the fields as you're passing by, mountain towns reaching for the sky, everybody stops to say Buonasera. You can hear it as you're driving home, south of Napoli or north of Rome. It's good evening, welcome back, Buonasera. The day is ending, the night is near, and I'm intending to get there, dear, for that special way you say Buonasera. When you say it, my world turns gay. It's not good morning, it's not good day. It's not I love you, but it sounds that way. Buonasera. I would meet you where lovers meet, a small piazza or a shady street, just to hear the way you say Buonasera. They're two words that I've heard before, lovely words that I still adore, but they mean just a little more from you. If you said it in a thousand ways, I'd be waiting for a thousand days for that little Italian phrase Buonasera. Buonasera.
You say you've waited far too long to catch the beat and join the throng. Well, now the time has come today. The great Plymouth sails away. It's happening now. Happening now.
Hello, this is Petula Clark. You know, there really are great things happening at your Plymouth dealers. Right now, during his Great Plymouth Sale, you'll find specially equipped Fury, Belvedere, Barracuda, and Valiant models with great values on popular options, such as vinyl roof, all vinyl interior, and many others. Quite an event. You see, when your Plymouth dealer has a sale, it isn't just good, it's great.
Just look what Plymouth's up to now.
This week in New York, Bess Meyerson was appointed Commissioner of Consumer Affairs. I know Bess about 20 years. I think the last time she bought a loaf of bread by herself was just about 20 years ago. But she'll do a good job, same as Betty Furness does on the federal level. People in show business are basically very practical, you know. They have to be. And they're good shoppers. For instance, take Dr. Joyce Brothers. Go ahead. Take her advice.
Do you go to the supermarket with a shopping list and come home with bags full of products you didn't really intend to buy? When that happens, you can, if you want, blame the package designers. That won't help your budget, but it may help your self-esteem. After all, in the supermarket, you're pitted against expert designers and psychologists and all the research and talent that money can buy. Many big food companies today spend a great deal of money on package design. They've learned that it pays, because you, the consumer, are fickle. Advertising may have convinced you of the merits of one product before you reach the store, but after you're there, a competing product may catch your eye. And chances are that that's the one you'll buy, not for logical reasons, but for emotional ones. The package designers have discovered that you associate certain items with masculinity. Beer is a prime example. You may drink it yourself, but you buy the cans or bottles you think would appeal to your husband. Strangely enough, you react in the same way to aluminum foil. Manufacturers have found that foil in feminine wrapping just doesn't appeal to you. Walking through the supermarket, you generally choose products that have feminine attraction. Although your eye only spends 0.7 seconds on each package, it invariably chooses those that are decorated with soft curves rather than with sharp points. And you favor the color red, or you used to. That's because, just a few years ago, women were too vain to wear glasses and did their shopping in a half-blind state. Red was the only color they saw distinctly. Today, glasses are fashionable and contact lenses are common. The result is that shoppers are bypassing red packages in favor of subtler colors, and the package designers are keeping up with the trend. If you would keep ahead of the package designers, researchers suggest that you keep your eyes open and your glasses polished. Instead of reaching for the package that attracts, use your eyes and your glasses to read the fine print on the labels. That way you'll be able to compare values and successfully fight inflation in your food budget. This is Dr. Joyce Brothers for Monitor.
According to the fine print here, the Duprees will now sing My Love, My Love.
Heaven is as endless.
Before the hour, you're on the monitor beacon. President Nixon this week announced his plans for his first trip out of the country. He'll make an 8-day tour of Western European capitals. Preparations have already begun. Herbert Kaplow, NBC News White House correspondent, reports.
Yesterday morning, an Air Force plane left Washington for Europe, carrying more than 50 men assigned to prepare the way for President Nixon's trip abroad, scheduled to start 2 weeks from today. The group is led by the president's consul, John Ehrlichman, who handled the logistics of the Nixon presidential campaign and who there dealt with many situations successfully. Ehrlichman has now perhaps an even more difficult time in some ways, primarily because there are 5 foreign nations involved. The plans must be coordinated with the other governments. Protocol, sites for conferences, housing for the president and his staff. A massive communication system must be prepared not only for the president, but for the large news corps which will go to Europe with him. As the president is flown across the Atlantic, Air Force planes will be deployed both to provide communications insurance and along with ships posted along the way to stand by in case they're needed for rescue. Also being looked into by the Air Force crew now in Europe with Ehrlichman are the airfields where the president will be taken. The crew familiarizing itself with the runways and other airport characteristics. Much of the burden of preparing for a presidential visit falls on the U.S. embassies in the countries to be visited, and the embassy staffs in Brussels, Bonn, Paris, London, and Rome are made up of busy people these days. Herbert Kaplow, NBC News, reporting for Monitor.
NBC News has assigned a 76-man team to cover President Nixon's trip, so you can count on complete coverage on radio and television.
Every day it's easier to see that you're gonna be a mother. Oh, so here we are, honeymoon, hotel room, married to each other. And the smile upon your trembling lips is brave, but it don't cover up those tears. And though I'm trying hard, all the emptiness I feel is just too big to hide. Oh, we've got nothing in common but our name and our shame and the blame for letting passion's foolish flame burn wide. And now we've got to cover up the fact to atone for our mistake and to protect the child. Oh, we've agreed to try and live a lie. I think it's all in vain. We're just not birds of a feather. Together. not birds of a feather.
O.C. Smith's new one, Isn't It Lonely Together? Maybe. Not for commuters. For commuters, it's just crowded together. In the trains, buses, highways, Mark Stewart reports on the Detroit, Michigan commuter scene.
Every morning, about 500,000 Detroiters jump into their cars and start a traffic jam. It's a daily exercise that lasts until it's time for work. The woes of the Detroit commuter are a little better lately after a 10-year building program for new freeways, but there are still motorists who say they have enough time to shave, brush their teeth, and munch down a bowl of Wheaties while waiting for traffic to clear on our beloved John Lodge Expressway. Detroit's main commuter problem 10 years ago was access to the downtown area. That problem has been fairly well coped with, but now there's a new snarl. And sad is the story for the commuter who lives in Detroit but works outside the city. There are growing numbers of industrial moves to the suburbs, but a lack of a mass transit system is a roadblock in many cases to even getting there for the inner city worker. Irving Rubin, who heads a $5 million transportation survey, says it's our biggest commuter headache.
All we have is largely the Detroit Department of Street Railways, a few small suburban lines, one commuter rail line. The level of service is not high, and the problem is particularly difficult for those people who live within the city of Detroit and work in the suburban areas, because the transit system is largely oriented to the inward commute. There have been major changes in this and other metropolitan areas in recent years, and as a result, we now have almost as many Detroiters who work in the suburbs as suburbanites who work in Detroit.
Until Rubin can sell Detroit on filling its mass transit void, we're all stuck with clogged freeways, bent fenders, and frazzled nerves. But in Detroit, no one wants to give up the automobile. I've got two cars myself, and I walk to work. This is Mark Stewart in Detroit for Monitor.
Well, he who walks to work gets to work. One such commuter is Milton Green of Fort Lee, New Jersey. He works in Midtown Manhattan, 8 miles away. He walks across the George Washington Bridge and on to his office. Takes 2.5 hours. He can't spare the time every day, but he does it about once a week. He beats the bus by 1 hour and 45 minutes. Marilyn May and Feelin'.
Feelin' good, feelin' fine, feelin' groovy all the time. Ain't it great? Just to be feeling. Feeling lost, feeling low, feeling helps to let you know you're alive. Be glad you're feeling. Once you pack it away, brother, you can't buy one more day. Brother, so you are feeling. Oh, feeling rain, feeling sun, feeling love for everyone. Feels so good. Thank God you are feeling. In your hands is your fate,
sure that you give.
loves me. He loves
He's
me.
Sending you a Valentine candy and flowers arrangement through his nearby FTD florist.
He loves me.
NBC News on the hour is next, then we'll carry on here, Morgan for Monitor.
This may startle many of you housewives. By cutting back a bit of the luxuries in your shopping, say an average of 50 cents a day, deposited at the Dime Savings Bank, the big savings bank for all New York, you would build a modest fortune. To illustrate, let's take age 25 by saving only 50 cents a day. Depositing $15 each month at the Dime, you would have over $22,800 before taxes at age 65, of which over $15,600 is Dime dividends, money you didn't have to work for. These figures are based on the Dime's latest dividend of 5% a year, paid from day of deposit, compounded quarterly. By plugging leaks in your pocketbook, tiny acorns grow into mighty oaks. You can have a fortune with very little effort. For a free booklet explaining the many ways you can save at the Dime, and for postage-free forms for a start at the Dime, write Savings, WNBC Radio, New York 10020. That's Savings, WNBC Radio, New York 10020. The Dime Savings Bank of Brooklyn, a member of the FDIC. The time, 3 o'clock. This is WNBC, AM and FM in New York.